bhavatu sahanau bhunaktu saham viryam karabham bahai tejasvina vadhitamastu mam vibhisham bahai om shanti 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 Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamivavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Asato Ma Satgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityor ma mritam gamaya Om shanti 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 Om Savitur varam rupam jyoti parasya dhimahi yanna satyena dipayet. So tonight, Mother's talk of the 23rd of September in 1953. Again, we're at this convergence of self and cosmos in this talk. How is it that we come to be in this universe? How is it that there comes to be a universe at all? What is the correspondence between the individual and the universe in which she or he lives? The Upanishads have different ways of explaining a profound experience of how becoming comes out of being. But they agree in the main that what is true of us is also true of the world. If we look for ourselves, if we look at the externalities of our being, we get lost in the phenomenal play. If we want to find ourselves, we have to look where it lives secretly, in a cave, in a heart, enclosed from the world's view. This is that tiny point in us, so minute that it has no real space. It does not really live in time, but it is the point of origination for everything. We come into being from that. That is the Atma. That is the Self. All things are there potentially, but nothing is there at the start. How does it come to be in the body? This point of absoluteness, this point of perfect being, vast consciousness, immeasurable consciousness, conceives of itself, thinks about a form in which it wants to inhabit, takes that idea and writhes it into a life force which wraps it into a physical shell, and from the formless comes a form, rupa. From the nameless comes a name, nama. And you are now in this. But if you become so accustomed to your surroundings that having lost your infinitude, you believe that you're finite, then you really have lost yourself. You've forgotten what you are, and you're out here living in the phenomena. You've lost your bearings. So all the initiatic traditions ask you to come back here to this place. In the Far East, they'll say, go to the doorless temple and wait. You have to become ready. You have to prepare yourself. You have to go through, in the Indian idea, lives and lives of preparation to discover this again once you've lost your way. Because now you've become synonymous with the universe, and all these phenomenal aspects of you are there in the world too. The world, in a sense, came into being the same way. The One conceived of itself and buried its real being in a field of unconsciousness which lies below all waking. And that field stirs into action and becomes the cosmos at the physical level, but doesn't stop there. Also, there is buried inside it a kind of life, and inside that life, a kind of mind, and inside that mind, a kind of supermind. And giving full support to that supermind is a bliss being. And all of that, which is true of the universe, is also true of us. Exactly the same concordat exists inside of us. So if you were to symbolize the heart of the individual as a triangle, it would be with the flat plane above and the downward pointing edges pointing down, as if to indicate that the individual descends. We descend from above into the universe and live here from the heart outwards. And that's the best way for us to live. We have to recover that, to live from inside out. Not, when I say the heart, do I mean the emotional being, but the heart behind the heart. Because emotions, mentations, physical sensations, those are all just stuff going on around the soul, behind the heart, behind the heart. So we have to get to that. But the universe too can be imaged as a triangle, and often seen as a mountain, and its base is on the bottom with two aspiring things. And so the convergence of the universal mountain trying to grow up and that of the descending triangle representing the soul coming into the cosmos, that convergence forms that six-pointed Sri Chakra, which is also the image, the icon, in a sense, at the center of Sri Aurobindo's symbol. Yes. So there, where they meet, there's the solution. Because we, living in deep communion with the cosmos, living our life divinely, bring the implied divinity out of the universe and make it manifest. It flowers in us. So the universe is always waiting for us to respond, because its secrets cannot become conscious, cannot become really mined until we go into the cave of the heart and find the miner. So the experience that you get when you find the soul and then return into the cosmos is one of this universal enchantment. The whole world becomes beautiful. Everything is a wonder. Even pain is an intense form of a supreme delight. Even suffering is a door to further existence, because nothing can really destroy you. You now know. No, it's not a knowledge. You are immortal, and you damn well live from that. That's how it is. So you go from life to life and you careen along and you get bruised and bloody and you die and you get reborn and you come back and you start all over again. But the more you go, the more you grow. And so you wind up in this wonderful harmony with all things. You become universalized yourself. You are a point at one with the universe, and all the universe seems to dwell in you. And then there's another phase in which the individuality disappears, and there's just the universe. And above it all is the divine, who is holding all of this in its own being. The supreme has never left us for a moment. And there's no way we can leave it. As far as we wander, we can't wander outside the divine. That's good news. So you'll know that Mother came and met Sri Aurobindo in 1914, and she was keeping a kind of journal of her inner experiences, which has been called Prayers and Meditations. And she wrote to Sri Aurobindo after she had to leave him and had got to Japan. She had a seminal experience of just this kind of magnitude. And so she wrote to him, and I know that I don't often read from text, and I don't read particularly well, but I think it's worth hearing this, if I can manage to croak it out. It's a wonderful passage, I think, in fact, translated by Sri Aurobindo into English from the French. The entire consciousness immersed in divine contemplation, the whole being enjoyed a supreme and vast felicity. Then was the physical body seized, first in its lower members, and next the whole of it, by a sacred trembling which made all personal limits fall away little by little, even in the most material sensation. The being grew in greatness, progressively, methodically, breaking down every barrier, shattering every obstacle, that it might contain and manifest a force and a power which increased ceaselessly in immensity and intensity. It was as a progressive dilatation of the cells, until there was a complete identification with the earth. The body of the awakened consciousness was the terrestrial globe moving harmoniously in ethereal space. And the consciousness knew that its global body was thus moving in the arms of the universal being, and it gave itself, it abandoned itself to it in an ecstasy of peaceful bliss. Then it felt that its body was absorbed in the body of the universe and one with it. The consciousness became the consciousness of the universe, immobile in its totality, moving infinitely in its internal complexity. The consciousness of the universe sprang towards the divine in an ardent aspiration, a perfect surrender, and it saw in the splendor of the immaculate light the radiant being standing on a many-headed serpent whose body coiled infinitely around the universe. The being, in an eternal gesture of triumph, mastered and created at one and the same time the serpent and the universe that issued from him. Erect on the serpent, he dominated it with all his victorious might, and the same gesture that crushed the Hydra enveloping the universe gave it eternal birth. Then the consciousness became this being, and perceived that its form was changing once more. It was absorbed into something which was no longer a form and yet contained all forms, something which, immutable, sees, the eye, the witness, and what it sees is. Then this last vestige of form disappeared, and the consciousness itself was absorbed into the unutterable, the ineffable. The return towards the consciousness of the individual body took place very slowly and a constant and invariable splendor of light and power and felicity and adoration by successive gradations, but directly, without passing again through the universal and terrestrial forms. And it was as if the modest corporeal form had become the direct and immediate vesture, without any intermediary, of the supreme and eternal witness. So this experience is of the cosmic consciousness. Maurice Bucky wrote about it. Wordsworth wrote about it in his own way in poetry. This is not an uncommon experience. This is attainable by anyone who is awake, that becomes sensitive to the world. That vision of the Supreme, who is in a sense seated on the infinite serpent, Shesha, the energy of creation, not simply pranic energy, not simply the life force, but it represents the whole of the universe. She said, sort of crushing the Hydra. That's, I think, a transcription into European language. But she was having an Indian experience. This is a recognizable motif from India. And of course, she was drenched by then in the mythology and the philosophy of India as she came to know it through Sri Aurobindo, deeply at one with him, and so open to this. It isn't that the serpent power is a negative force. It is a creative force, and that is why it's infinite. It coils and coils. There's always more to manifest, just as there's always more of the universe to experience. And when we've finished with this universe, as when we finished with our last physical tenement, then we are reborn into a new universe, just as we are reborn into a new body. Just as every day when you wake up, it's a new day and you have a new life in front of you. You can remain mired in the past. You can believe all your history, and that's who you are, and that's all you are. Or you can step forward into a new day and be the soul, just greeting the world freshly. You can carry all that from behind lightly with you. Don't carry it as a burden. Step into it. Be vigorous. Be forward moving. And be open to the universe. So, your comments. So I take that silence as assent, and you universally agree.
From what book was the letter?
That was Mother's Prayers and Meditation, I think, of the 15th or the 16th of November, 1915. Let me come back here and see again. I'm wrong. It's the 26th of November, 1915. And it's in her collected works, her volume one, in fact. Downloadable for free from, as you know, from my endless emails. From the Sri Aurobindo Ashram website. You can put it on your tablet of choice. You can put it on your smartphone of choice.
Carry it everywhere.
So we're pretty close to Diwali. I want to mention that our friends Mahesh and Shilpa Modha down in Tampa were put in charge of the Diwali celebration there. And he approached it differently. You know, he's sort of involved in finance and banking and business down there. And he organized an affair with 200 volunteers. He really stretched out, and the theme was relationships matter. And that was a phrase anointing anybody that came in, because everywhere there was a sign saying that, and at the end of it, everyone attested that this was the best event that they've had in 19 years. And so Mahesh called and said that they felt the mother's presence there through the whole thing, being devoted to mother in Sri Aurobindo. They wanted those blessings in advance and wanted to let us know how well things had gone. You'll remember that our friend Kiran Senapati, who used to be a beloved member of our community here, lives there. And I think he was present for that too with his family. Leka, his wife, and Anju. Isn't that not Anju? What is it? His daughter's name?
I think it is.
It is Anju?
Okay. Yeah, I think so.
Okay, good. So, good to hear. And they will see you in December, maybe a couple of times, as they drive to Texas and as they come back from Texas. They'll stop and stay with us. But not with the cats. Those fearsome man-eaters, there might be nothing left. So the Festival of Light. Oh, you know, something Sri Aurobindo had said in that letter was about the presence of the evil persona in everyone's existence, especially if you really get going and charging on yoga. Inevitably, some obstacle comes up, some apparently ineradicable difficulty. And that is the nature of things. You know, Carl Jung wrote about that in his own analytics, philosophy, and psychology, that we cannot ignore the nethermost parts of the universe. We'll have no solution to the creation if we deny and obstruct. We have to find a way to incorporate and transform that. And this is one of the mother's central points in this talk, is that when you find your soul and can live in its serenity and bliss, then you are making a shortcut towards the transformation of the world by that. Otherwise, we're left in an eonic struggle to change self, society, and globe. But if we can live from this point of harmony and bliss in us instead, then the transformation can occur quite rapidly, because it is regal over matter. Matter, life, and mind will obey the soul power, but not each other. So, closing thought. And unless there are questions, I think we'll go for meditation now.
I have a question.
Mm.
You know, Mother was talking in answer to a question about nature of creation. Now, the answer was that, you know, the creation is like an image on a screen. Mm-hmm. And that gave me the impression that there's no solidity to it, no materiality to the creation. It's like a picture. You're seeing a cinema. And that kind of reminded me of the Mayavadi philosophy, you know, that, you know, they say it's really a dream world, it's an illusion, that's another way to put it. So what's your take on it? Is it like Maya?
I think it's a mistaken analogy. For her, the screen on which this is projected is the screen of consciousness. And we come into We come into being when we are aware of our being. We're not even aware that we exist until we have self-consciousness. The divine has always got that self-consciousness, and so can arrange the themes, the modalities, the particularities of the universe and hold it in its vast awareness. So it is real by dint of that. We become real again when we become aware of that self. And that's what we do when we get to the into the cave of the heart, to the guha, into the core of our being, and rediscover there our soul. We become one with the Atma, with the vast spiritual self, and give then meaning to the cosmos. It always exists in the consciousness of the Supreme. It becomes real to us when we evolve into it. So the difference is that we are founded on a responsible individuality for us to improve and transform the cosmos means that we have to do it ourselves first. So we're the agents through which the cosmos comes into being. But it exists perpetually in the awareness of the divine. And that is the only way we can be real. All of Vedanta agrees that consciousness is innately the same thing as being, and that being is the same thing innately as bliss. And so where there is consciousness, being is. And so the universe, in a sense, is a congealing of that consciousness by universal intent. The divine intends the universe to come into being and holds it conceptively. That is solidity. That is not fragile. That doesn't break up into molecules and float away. All the molecules and all of that stuff is inside the conscious being of the Supreme. In a spaceless way, as I say, you can represent it perfectly as a mathematical point which has no space, no point in time. All is there. And that's why nothing can ever speak all the fullness or all the emptiness that is about us. Hinduism cannot affirm it profoundly enough. Buddhism cannot deny it aggressively enough. That mystery cannot be solved by anything except direct experience. So you have to get into that to know what it is or is not. So philosophy, I think, is a kind of a helpful tool to tune the mind to what possibilities lie before us. But it isn't philosophy that takes us to that experience. It's not necessarily even the sadhana that takes us there. It's that moment when the soul stands before that reality and allows the division to close. Because that wants to lean into us. It's our effort to keep it out that establishes the boundaries of the ego. So, towards the experience. And now, towards the shrine room. Mm-hmm. Namaste. Jai Ma.